Hi, everyone. You're listening to In the Open, a podcast by Mental Health America, where we talk all things mental health related.
Hi, guys. It's America and Teresa. We're back for another session of In the Open, and we are really excited because today is a special day. Ta-da! It's supposed to be like sunshine, rainbow, all that fireworks, because it's our 100th episode of In the Open. Woo-hoo! Yep, cue trumpet. Du-du-du-du. Yes, so that is an amazing feat for us. I would say for us, but I'm speaking for myself, because this started out of just an effort in us wanting to get out in front of people and help people. So I'm so happy by it.
It is a huge thing because America has to drag me every day to say, you got to do this. So she's my accountability buddy.
But that's what's good about this. I think we hope that it's helping people. And in thinking about like happiness, that's actually what we're going to be talking about today, right? Like, how can we explore if we will ever be happy again?
So we're also running up against what feels like the anniversary for us all getting locked in to our houses because of coronavirus. And it's kind of, there are similar patterns, right? Like, am I ever going to leave this house?
Do you think that that's true?
It's a combination of dread and hope and not knowing if you're supposed to have hope for change or if you're just going to be stuck forever. The spirit of this question feels the same in that way.
Oh, no? So I'm struggling with that because my immediate thought is like, so there are people in the world that have never actually thought this? There's never been a point in your life where you're like, will I ever be happy again? Because you're just a generally happy person. Like, I...
So that's okay.
I can't.
That's
I
really
can't.
Interesting because I think that you and I both have shared that, like, I have struggled with a depressed episode. Mm-hmm. And generally in my life, that question comes up every time I'm in the middle of an episode. And that question has only had serious weight once. I can't remember if it was my first episode or my second one, but it was my most severe episode. Because in that moment, I actually was genuinely fearful that maybe my brain would never be normal again. Which for me, that question is tied to that. Versus, and now I can see the difference between that thought and kind of the way I can get, because I'm just naturally grumpy or whatever, like, oh, am I ever going to not be grumpy? Like a grumpy curmudgeon. Like, those are different experiences. So do you relate to that sense of despair where you're like so in that hard spot that you actually believe that maybe I just will never, ever be happy again?
I have had times in my life where I've asked myself this question. It's like, can I be happy? Will I ever be happy? Like all the crap that has led me to feel super down and completely hopeless. And, you know, for me, I think that you have to feel a certain level of distress to get to a place of asking this question. And it's just a position to, are there people in the world that actually have never asked themselves this question? And that's mind-blowing, man. Like, I can't think of one person that maybe... And now I'm going to have to go ask all my people, man. Like, I really want to know.
I'm guessing, can I guess that that question for you really came up after your divorce?
Yes. No, yes, it's part of my divorce, but it's also tied to like the period between my divorce and finding another person. Like, I didn't need another person to be happy, and I learned that. Mm-hmm. So it's tied to all of these beliefs around what we have, who we think we are.
I think it's a really common experience when you go through a breakup or a change that makes you feel disconnected. That to me, when I've worked with people, there are a lot of similarities between having a depressed episode and going through a major life grief. circumstance.
Yeah.
And divorce is probably the most common, right? Death of a parent, death of a child, divorce.
Yeah.
Divorce is even more common than death of either of those things, except maybe death of a parent. But most death of a parent are expected. So there's the grief is substantially different than your parent dying unexpectedly and young. Like, that's devastating. Losing your child, always devastating. Like, you know, people say, yeah, you should never outlive your children.
Yeah.
And divorce, super common, and is such, there's so much identity there, right? Like, who am I? Am I ever going to be a good partner? Can I be happy with a person, or should I just accept that I will be alone forever?
Yes. And I think part of that too is in what you're speaking about and where we are today in our world. It's like we have had to, in many different ways, we have had to live our life boxed in, physically boxed in, and then emotionally boxed in, because there's only so much we can take and accept because of the circumstances that we're living under. And then that gets exacerbated by these questions that it's like, what makes me happy? I'm not happy. I'm just functioning. And there's a difference, right? For me, there's a very distinct difference where I can totally go on about my day, work, participate, but am I truly like finding joy and feeling happy?
Yeah.
Not so much.
I think that's the bulk of the discussion. But before we jump into moments of happiness or joy or whatever, if I had to ask you yes or no, how you would answer to someone like, will I ever be happy again? Do you have a gut immediate answer?
I would say yes.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. Yes.
I would say yes, but it takes time for you to get there.
Okay. I would say yes, but you have to think about what happiness means and is.
Those are two very good points.
But in that moment, like, let's just take a moment to acknowledge that in the moment you ask this question, what you are dealing with is darkness and despair and a loss of hope.
Yes.
It's not about joy or happiness. It's about grieving and understanding that the state of where your mind is in a place of darkness.
Yes.
And that is hard and dark and cold and scary.
That's the part that I was going to say, the scary part of it, because there comes a moment where it's like this shadow kind of starts to envelop you, and you're just like, and it's just growing, and it's growing inside of you, and it feels like an external factor that is just like, it doesn't matter. Like, all I'm seeing is this despair.
Yeah. I have a professor who talked to me. I think her name is Margaret Fetting. And she said that when she does work with clients who have substance use issues, she's always evaluating their addiction in what she calls like the blanket of darkness. So like, how deep are they in the hole?
Yeah.
How far away does a sense of hope feel for you? And I love that metaphor, because I'm just like, when I'm in that dark spot, I don't care about destroying my life. My life is already destroyed, which is why when I'm in those darkest moments, I can double down on engaging in bad coping skills.
Mm-hmm.
When somehow the control over that makes me feel better, even though I know that as I actively engage in those bad coping skills, I'm hurting myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, it's the control that I have to perpetuate this darkness.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to envision a way to crawl out of the hole, because I think, like, not just is it like the darkness, but like the quality of the hole. Like, if it's slick and it just feels so hard climb out of it, because the hole at the top is just so far away, and I'm basically buried in like a slick muddy pool. In that moment, you're just like, why bother? That's the thing, right? A lot of thoughts about wanting to die and never wanting to be happy again is like, a lot of that's also like, why bother?
Mm-hmm.
Because what you're telling me to do sounds so hard.
Yeah, it sounds like a monstrous task that is in front of you, that there's no possible way to be like, just start with something.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that's the people who are sitting at the stupid hole at the top. You're like, you get enough glimpse of their life where you're like, or people say stuff to you and you're just like, I feel so much guilt and shame now because I also am being told that I should just get better and like snap out of it, you know?
Yeah, but I don't think, you know, this is probably answering my question because either two things, either people who never have really experienced this point of despair and they're just like, it's very unknown to them, you know, yeah. That's one. And then the other is maybe they haven't.
They're in denial.
Yes. In some way, they're in denial. They haven't really looked at the real reasons that they are all happy go luck. Because that's not possible for me.
Denial is interesting because they have experienced suffering, but their coping skill is denial. So they prefer to cope by it pretending that whatever happened that is your suffering, I have this skill that I can just pretend it didn't happen. And I have family members who do this with such great skill. It's astounding to me because I'm like, you and I live through the same reality. Like, how is it that you literally could either be like, oh, that's no big deal, or sometimes actually literally forget and just be like, that didn't happen. And I'm just like, what?
Dude. You know what makes me think of?
You just said that did not happen?
Yeah. There is a component to this conversation because I just had this conversation where I call them dwellers and non-dwellers. Dwelling, you sitting in it and having you process and think about it, is in many ways, for me, my process. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to understand the why and fix it, get it all pulled apart so that I can be like, that's not going to work. And I move on. Yes. And then there are folks that are non-dwellers that they're like, eh, it happened, whatever. And they just move on. And I'm like, wait, why didn't you think about that? They're like, for what? There's no point in doing that.
Oh, I'm so envious of those people because I know I have people in my life who are sufferers who are non-dwellers. And I'm just like, And we clash in these moments, right? Because they're like, what you are doing right now is making me sick. Yes. And they're like, you know, what you're putting out, I'm not going to be able to process. So my only way of surviving is to not dwell.
Yep.
That's why it is a coping skill versus for us dwellers. I love this. I'm going to start incorporating this framework. It's like my dweller, non-dweller. They call that processing. They're like, you overprocess everything. Why do you need to sit in it? Why do you need to sit in your damn suffering for so long? And I'm just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I wish my brain didn't do this, you know?
Yes.
It does, though. It cannot help it. It's like, I've tried to label that, like, is it anxiety? Is it a coping skill? Am I a processor? Is it my personality? Am I a dweller? Now am I a dweller? Am I a processor? I derive energy and I feel comfort from dwelling.
I do too.
And that's the distinction.
Maybe that's why we can talk about all this stuff on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, that's why we are dwellers.
Yes.
Yes. But some people aren't dwellers. And when you run up a If you're a dweller and you run up against a non-dweller.
Yeah, there's total disconnect. And, you know, you want to have like a conversation like, sit with me here, you know? And they're just like, what? No, man.
Like, no.
No.
They're like, if I'm going to survive, I can't be near you right now.
Yes. Yes.
I think we also intuitively get that in our moments of suffering, which is why for people who have depressed episode or go through a divorce or a breakup, that we naturally isolate ourselves because it is a coping skill too. It's like, I recognize that the energy I'm putting out is so hard that I feel fear and shame and guilt that I'm going to be hurtful to people or it's going to not be helpful to me. So I'm just going to go be in my corner.
Yeah.
You know?
It also makes me think about this idea, especially for many people that have experienced loss during this time. You know, there is this idea that I can't show you my pain because it's going to be too painful for you. you know? So then we, as the person in pain, encapsulate ourselves in that way. I'm going to go sit in my corner. I really don't want to see you, you know, thanks, but no thanks. Right. But in many ways, for me, my framework is like, I need you to see my pain. I need you to see my pain because I don't know how else to ask for help. And only when you see how hard this is on me, are you then going to be able to understand it?
When we try to make bids, when we try to like come out to make bids to say, okay, I'm suffering and I can't keep doing this by myself.
Yeah.
That's when your processing is not helpful.
Yeah.
And this is where we as processors fall into our own traps. Like we played ourselves and you're like, oh, well, now I still process the crap out of it and I still don't feel better. So then I'm like, will I ever be happy again?
So let me ask you a question. Hold on.
Okay.
Would you say today that you are happy?
So, okay. So this goes back to our question of how I would answer, will I ever be happy again? It's like, yes, but how do I define happiness? I stopped asking the question, will I ever be happy again? And I kind of just shifted it to, I am who I am and I don't need to be somewhere or anywhere. Like happiness felt like a goal that I was never going to attain. So I had to just switch it and be like, what I do know is I find moments of happiness. So then time is happiness or an event is happy, but I am not personally happy. Does that make sense? I don't need to be happy. My personality is not happy. No one would be with me and be like, you're a happy person.
No,
but I have happy moments and I can accept that. I've accepted that as reality and not just reality, but there are strengths to it. So like I've learned to love who I am as a punchy, grumpy person who can be funny and takes my pain to try and be funny. But I don't know. Would you describe me as happy? Like
no.
Happy is not a personality trait. That's what I mean. Like it's not a personality trait I have.
I would never use those words, Teresa. You know what's funny though about this? You know, a couple of episodes ago, we talked about love, you know, like how do I love myself? And you like totally like lived it right there in that moment. So that's awesome. One, I am happy for that.
For this moment that I can say that without crying.
Yes.
Without crying and breaking down, which because that's what that did. So that episode helped me to feel, to ground me and remind myself that like, oh, I did this work, you know? Because before, when we did that episode and I was like, even the mere thought of it was still so painful. It was like, today I'm in a better place. I could say today I was in a better place. But let me tell you, 5 days ago.
I really do love that. And I also love this idea of how you've reframed happiness as not being a destination. And I think that's what exists in many people's brains is like, okay, you're going to get on this train and you're going to land there. You're just going to live there. And that's not real. That's not real in any sense of the word for me, in my reality. Yeah. I truly believe that you can find moments when you are at peace, which for me is tied to feeling happy. Mm-hmm. And then moments of joy where you're just, and they're just unexpected. And you're just like, oh my God, I am really just right now happy in what it means. And understanding that's not going to come every day.
No, it shouldn't actually, because people who always feel unnaturally happy, that's called mania. That gets you in trouble too, right?
Yes.
But people who are happy as part of their personality, that doesn't mean that they don't suffer either.
And I believe that. I truly do believe that, Teresa. Now that I think about it, you know, I know people that are happy, that they personify happy. You would describe them in that way.
Yeah.
They're a happy person.
Yeah.
But in the same way that for you, you know, no one would be like, Teresa's just happy. Nobody would, and they would be surprising to no end if somebody was like, America's so happy. No, not a word used to describe me, you know. And that's okay. Like, I am totally about it because I'd rather not be described as somebody that's happy. I'd rather be described as somebody that's going to tell you like it is and be real about what's happening, because I want you to be real with me. And that's the experience that I want people to feel. Yeah. And most often that's the way it's happened in my life. Like, people have existed in these spaces where you have to act a certain way. And I'm just like, dude, I don't care about any of that. Just be who you are. And it gets to what you're saying too, that you've come to accept that the definition of what this is, and oftentimes purported to us by the rest of the world, like, oh, you're going to have to be happy. And I talk about sunshines and rainbows and unicorns, you know, dude,
yeah.
I can tell you one of the things that has made me like truly happy in the last few weeks is like sitting with my kids and like painting. Mm. And they're just painting, I'm painting, and they're struggling as much as I'm struggling. But we're sitting mm-hmm. doing an activity together, and at the end we have an end product. And I'm like, dude, we did that together, and we made something pretty, you know?
Yeah. I love that you're saying that. So we know that happiness is not a destination. It can be events. And what I love about your story and this moment that you described is it is an event. It was an activity you did. And it reminds us that sometimes happiness is about intentionality, like intentional mindfulness. These are all practices in mental mm-hmm. health that people talk about. Like in that moment when you were painting, you could have been somewhere else. You could have been not paying attention to the work, to the mm-hmm. kids, or maybe you weren't at that moment, but later you came back and realized, you know what, that was happy, right? So you don't have to feel happy in that moment to still identify it as a happy moment. I think there's a lot to that, because sometimes practicing things that are good for our mental health help us to see events in moments of happiness. When you said painting, can I share mine? Like
yes,
when I was like,
course.
Oh, what is my moment of happiness? It's silly, but every night, actually, the first thing I thought was Cheetos. I was like, oh, I found happiness in Cheetos. But I have weird eating habits. You know, you and I talk about this.
Yes.
But one of the ones I picked up recently is how I eat my ice cream.
What kind of ice cream are you eating, first off?
So the moment I feel more happiness in my day, I get worked up to this moment where I get to sit on my couch and put on Netflix. And then I pull up the entire tub of ice cream. And if I can, so there are two ways that I basically eat this ice cream. If I'm not intentional, I basically just shove giant mouthfuls of ice cream into my mouth, just eating it, you know, thoughtlessly.
Yes.
And then mindfulness practices, like sometimes I'll take a pause and I'll just like scoop the spoon and just like watch it curl.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put it in my mouth. Similar to like DBT, dialectical behavioral therapy, with like mindfulness practice. And I can tell like, oh, I am slowing down. I'm doing this practice. I'm going to eat my ice cream and I'm going to savor every bite of benefit. And I'm just like, in this moment, this is happiness.
Yes. I can, that totally resonates with me as a fellow ice cream eater. But you know, when I'm truly happy when I'm eating ice cream, when it's coffee flavored ice cream and it's Haagen-Dazs. Like you can,
because that's like a treat.
Yes. And it is a treat. It's something that just helps me feel good. That I'm just like, yeah. And it's the same way. I have a special spoon that I use because it's the right amount. I don't like just shove like the ice cream in because I really want to taste it.
Look at how happy we're getting. Just reminiscing on our happy activities. But this is what that looks like.
Yes.
For me is the curmudgeon to reflect on my happy time.
It
brings
funny.
In the dopamine, it brings in the endorphins, and it's like, this is basically what it feels like to be high on your food habits, and that is happy.
That's
part of the problem.
This
is part of the problem, right? You're like, I love this and I hate it.
But you know, I remember having this thought when I was painting that I was like, why don't you do this anymore? You used to like doing this type of stuff, right? And yeah. For a moment, I was like, why'd you stop doing this? And then I declared it, you know, to the family. That's it. I'm going to buy more paints and we're going to paint more. And they were looking at me like, oh, all right. And I was like, it doesn't matter if you don't want to do it. I will do it. Right.
Yeah.
So it's about, again, finding whatever's working in your brain to help you identify those moments. And it does not have to be like this monstrous thing that, oh, well, I've decided to go and take up, you know, jogging to do a 5K. It doesn't matter, man. It's like, it's as simple as, you know, if you think a walk is going to do you good.
Yeah.
I think that that helps redefine what this moment and happiness can feel like for people.
Yeah. And you may engage in activity and realize that it brings you happiness and joy. So you're saying, I want to commit to it, mm-hmm. which is good. That's about finding practices and engaging them in habits and making those happy moments become habits to see how they work. But I think you bring up an interesting point, though, because if I'm listening to your story and I'm like, what do the people who are there feel, or what have you felt when you thought, like, why didn't I do this? Mm. It's funny because the counter to happiness can be guilt or shame about why did I abandon X? And so guilt is going to make you feel bad for being happy. Like, our brains do this stupid thing where you're like, oh, you felt happy? Well, let me throw you a curveball.
Yeah.
Let me enter shame and guilt for you. What you said reminded me of, like, to be happy, I had to be very aware that I have to fight against guilt and expectations, because there was a time where I would say I wanted to be happy, so I needed to do X, mm-hmm. but then I would set up this expectation for myself and tie it to happiness, and that became a problem, because then it became another thing I wasn't doing.
Yeah, right. It became the cycle, right? It's like, oh, you failed. Yeah. You suck. You can't be happy. Oh, well, I'm going to try. No, you failed. And I get that. And that's, I think, where we get stuck oftentimes, because we do have this belief that it has to be something like completely amazing, you know?
Yeah. The destination.
You know, going back to this question, like, if somebody asked me that, you do have to qualify it. You know, you have to say, yes, but there are these things that you have to consider. It is not just an easy answer for you to be like, yes, of course you will be. And my Hallmark card is coming. You know, it's like, no, man, mm-hmm. that's not what life is about. And we're being disingenuous if we say that that's the case. I would also think that for people that tend to be just naturally happy people, sometimes it's good to be around them, because in many ways they help you. They have helped me visualize what embodying happiness can look like, knowing that they have had super difficult times in their life. And you're like, what? How can you be so shiny and not all rusty and stuff, you know?
It also gives me a sign of how bad I'm in, because in a moment where I'm depressed, mm-hmm. being around someone who is happy can be painful and unbearable. Yeah. But the moment it doesn't become unbearable anymore and I can start to rub up against those people and try and absorb their energy, it becomes helpful. And that's a cue to me of the stage I'm in.
Okay.
That basically tells me, like, the moment I can start to feel like it's not unbearable, I'm like, okay. It's like the hope you see, right? I'm like, okay, rub up against this person.
Drop the rope.
Go take a shower.
I'm ready to climb up. Yes.
Go take a shower. Go eat something healthy, do the things that you need to do, you know, because basically my brain is giving me the respite to say, I'm going to let you start to do things that make you feel healthier, like, right now. And I've learned that I have to be attentive to those moments, because it's so easy to slip back.
Yeah. I think they're so fleeting, right? That because that blanket, right, that exists is so overwhelmingly heavy and big, right? Because it's just like one of those, like, I think of the Mexican blankets, you know, you just cover yourself, that you're just like, you see a little glimmer of light and you're like, wait, and you gotta grasp for it.
Yeah. And it is in itself a practice.
Yes.
Because this has been a skill that I've built up over decades.
Yeah.
To see it is a skill. To know what to do with those moments has been a skill. And it's exhausting. Like, when I describe this process for people, they're like, oh, I know what you're saying, but it sounds so exhausting.
Yeah.
I'm like, I totally get that. It is, because it actually really is exhausting. It takes a lot of mental energy to work yourself out of despair.
Yeah. We become accustomed to feeling certain ways and functioning mm-hmm. that are so comfortable for us, so that you're just like, I have no idea how to even begin this process mm-hmm. of trying to identify what happy is, finding what happy is for me, right? That's the identification piece. And then ultimately being like, I'm going to try it. I'm going to do it. And I think that's the piece that I would hope people walk away with. And just, what does it mean? You know, are you able to identify something in your day, in your day's days or whatever, to be like, yeah, I was happy. That can make me happy.
In this moment, I was happy. Mm-hmm. That's what the gratitude work in psychology is about. Yeah. Right? It says that as a practice, being mindfully attentive to moments of gratitude builds that muscle in your brain so that you could do that more and more and more and more. It's a bit simplified, but it's also complicated by depression, the way your chemistry is, the moments of your life, being triggered by a traumatic experience. Like, you know that it's a skill and you can practice it, but don't set it up as a destination.
I think having conversations like this is really important because it helps to demystify what happiness really is for some folks. But also, if we're able to like pop something into our environment that helps us frame this for us every day, be like, I'm going to look at this X thing every day that says, hey, America, remember you said you were going to try this. Part of that, I think, for me is my vision board. And I have a vision board. I know you don't have one. You know, you hate them. But it reminds me of things that I'm working towards, things that make me happy. And I have a big thing about pictures. So in the house, like, I have pictures of happy moments. And when I look at them, it makes me think back to that. And I'm like, oh, that was nice.
Oh.
Yeah. So I don't know. Nice. Do you do something like that?
I'm not very good at that. I've been living in my house for 7 years and I don't think there's a single picture up. Okay. I can't also like set that up as a goal because I'll just feel crushed by it. So, and I'm seeing what I'm feeling based on like your thing. And I'm just going to be like, nope. And it's okay that I'm not. Yes, that's just not how I operate. Maybe I have some weird goal of wanting to eventually decorate, you know, and put pictures up, but I know I'm never going to get to it.
But maybe it's not you.
I have to say that it's okay. Yes. But my version of that is like, yes, those rituals that I find that bring me moments of happiness. So I think what you're saying is good, right? Yes, we find the things that help us orient ourselves to vision. And I think what you're saying too that's important is use your senses. So that's funny because I like touch and I probably like taste. I'm not very good with like visual, which is maybe why. And that's just not my – that's not the sense that I'm attuned to. I'm kind of attuned to touch. So I have fuzzy soft blankets. That's my version. I don't – I have my fuzzy blanket and I just get cuddly in it with myself and my people sometimes. So eating ice cream, getting cuddled up in a soft blanket.
That's great. Yes.
But the final point I'm thinking about is I think about society and I am appreciative that as a society, we have moved away from this idea as happiness is a destination. Because you think about television in the 60s and 70s, like so much of TV back then was always portraying the American family as like happy.
The Leave It to Beaver, yeah.
TV has allowed us to accept that the human condition is full of all emotions and that happiness is not supposed to be who you are. And that's going to be helpful for everyone because we can't set up these like weird expectations that you're supposed to be happy.
Yeah. I would like to say that this made me happy. It always makes me happy to do a podcast. That's another space where I think I really feel happy.
I quit therapy only because I have this. I felt like I could quit therapy basically because I have therapy with America.
I would like to say the one final thought, try to find something that makes you happy, you know, today, tomorrow, a moment that you can remember and end on that.
Yeah.
Bye guys. Have a good week. Bye. Keep fighting in the open.